Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raise Nation Radio, broadcasting live from AFP Icon here in beautiful Seattle, Washington. I'm your host, Steve Lausch from One Cause, and I'm thrilled to be here at AFP Icon, where fundraisers from around the world are coming together to elevate impact and spark some change. As a proud Icon sponsor, One Cause is excited to celebrate the innovation, the passion, and some incredible work happening across the nonprofit sector. So stay tuned. We've got powerful conversations, fresh insights, and the energy of the AFP International Conference coming your way. All right, back at the One Cause booth at Icon 2025, and of all the people that have been spinning around the booth, I saw her, I got her, she's in the white chair, Barbara O'Reilly, Windmill Hill Consulting, so good to see you, always a pleasure. Thank you for giving me just a couple minutes of your time.
Oh my gosh, I always make space for the white chair when I'm here at Icon, so thank you for saving it for me this time.
I was sitting in that chair last year, and I was being introduced by Dawn Lego, yep, who really should be in this chair. She said, "Describe the scene, Steve." Like, I didn't know what to say. I was like, "Well, we're in two of the comfiest white chairs, I think, on the show floor." But anyway, here we are. We are on day one, and so good to be back at Icon.
Yep.
And so many nonprofits, our professionals are walking through these halls, and I just can't help but think they work with consultants every day. You work with nonprofits every day. What are you noticing? Where your finger's on the pulse? What are they thinking? How are they doing? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, so this year feels different for just more in the conversation. So I'll say, let me back up and say the first year, I think it was 2022, when the first in-person Icon after the pandemic.
Yes.
And you could feel it. People were excited to be back. Like the whole conference, you remember that. Like everyone was just happy to be around each other again.
Here we are again.
Yep.
Finally.
Yep. Those in-person big hugs,
yes,
bear hugs. And
so sweet.
It was great to be there. And you could feel it just pervade the entire conference and gatherings. And this time I don't feel the anxiety at the large group level, but just even today alone, I've had probably three conversations with fundraisers who all have talked about the impact that the last 100 days have had on their own organization. One organization made the decision to close, which was just heartbreaking to hear. Another organization is forecasting 95% of their budget is going to get cut or potentially get cut. Another is trying to figure out where in that range they might potentially lose, whether it's state or federal funding. And so that's the thing, that it's not as palpable as in the large setting.
At the group level.
Yeah. But it's something that it's coming up over and over again. And I see it as a consultant working with our clients or potential clients, having that conversation of how they're navigating through these uncertain times, but hearing it in just total, you know, new fundraising friends, hearing that it's top of mind for every single one of them. There's no organization that can escape what's going on over these last 100 days.
I want to thank you for acknowledging the energy in the room, mm-hmm, because it is. I mean, look around now. Many of them have moved on to the general session, but an hour ago, this place was booming and people are smiling and there are those same bear hugs. And it's so great to see that and frankly give them and take them. But I love the dynamic when you can pull somebody away, you can have a little pause and the honesty can creep into the conversation. Mm-hmm. Candor maybe is a better word.
Yep.
And the real deal comes onto the table, mm-hmm, and you address that every day. You heard it here already. So Barbara, what are you saying now? And that's a big question and maybe a burdensome one. Like, what do you say to that nonprofit? But clearly you're having those conversations. How do you try to encourage them?
In a couple different ways. So first is checking in with them as human beings, as staff, right? Yeah. How are you doing? How are you and your team doing? What are the things that you're all grappling with that we can help with in the non-fundraising? Like, can we just be a set of ears or a sounding board? So really just recognizing this is affecting them as people. And again, the sector is dynamic and is vibrant and is resilient, but this is going to cause shockwaves in, I hate using this word, but in unprecedented ways. So checking in with them first. The second, though, is then saying, okay, every organization is facing uncertainty in some way, whether they are directly being affected by the budget cuts, or maybe they are doing work in DEIA, and that's going to have some sort of ramifications for how they do that work, or if they can do that work, as just two examples. So it's then helping them to think through, what does this look like for you as an organization? What do some scenario forecasting to say, we anticipate X percent, I'm going to just use makeup numbers. We think that we're going to lose, you know, $10 million in budget cuts.
Right.
And so this, if this happens, this is what this means in terms of loss of services, number of clients who maybe are no longer served, staffing reductions, sort of the whole thing. It's hard. That's hard for organizations to even think through. So it's that sort of scenario planning of like, what does this look like for us? What would, you know, what's the number that we would have to work with? What does this look like in reduction of services? What do we then think is our delta between what the number, the amount of money we need to be operating at our fullest potential and what we might be looking at? And that can come, it doesn't have to be a super formal process of forecasting, but it's important to then be able to have a concrete road, what is, or at least line of sight for saying, if we lose this budget, you know, this grant, this is what this means. And then we have a very good understanding of what the gap is to fill. That then can give organization leaders clearer talking points with their donors, because...
Yes. So this isn't a conversation that just stays in the boardroom.
No. No.
This isn't just about charts and spreadsheets and operations.
Correct.
This is about mobilizing and
Yeah. Well, and the boards themselves sometimes have to have this, they have to reckon with this too. Mm-hmm. So they have to understand that this, you know, if you lose a $50 million grant and that's 80% of your budget, it isn't like you can just now magically raise $80 million, you know, whatever the amount is. Organizations are not, if they're very heavily reliant on public funding, their private funding, fundraising systems and infrastructure may not be ready to scale in that X10X way. So being very realistic with the boards that this isn't just that you wave a magic wand, because the other piece of this that's a nuance is that unlike in during the pandemic, when we knew it was impacting organizations at all these ways, and donors were still stepping up, they were stepping up in unprecedented ways. They were being extraordinarily generous in lots of ways for organizations that have been supporting, that they had never supported because they were new emerging issues that were coming up. All of those things, we saw generosity really spike. But now we know that the giving is very much driven by what happens in the economy. And if the stock market has been doing the wild ride that it has been doing, if we keep hearing all of these urgent calls and warnings about the worst recession that we've ever seen, or stagflation, or the increased additional costs that are to consumers that the tariffs might have, people are going to wait and figure out, do I have the personal capacity to be able to continue to charitably support organizations when I don't know how much is going to still be in my, you know, my sort of disposable income?
Do you think that question is asked differently at different levels of giving? Is that a major gift donor question, or is that just a human question?
I think it's just a human question, although what I suspect is that it's going to show up more visibly with donors who are giving larger amounts, because they are the ones who will have the stock market portfolios that they're tracking.
Correct.
The retirement portfolios that they're tracking.
Yes.
The income that will be, you know, somehow more directly affected. It might affect everyday donors, but we don't know quite yet, because they probably don't know how the economy is going to be affecting them. Mm-hmm. They don't know that their cost of living, how their cost of living might increase. So mm-hmm. I think that those the sort of everyday donors are giving, continuing to give, but the larger donors are waiting and seeing.
Yes. And I almost wonder if that the everyday donor is on a little bit of, and I don't mean that for this to sound so dire, mm-hmm. but it's on a little bit of borrowed time, because the more time goes by and the more these events unfold, mm-hmm. you might see, it's yeah. possible that we might see that pull back
yes.
a little bit more.
Well, listen, I mean, we have been losing donors, and this is not a news. We've been losing donors at a rate of about 20% over the last 20. In 2018, when the Tax Cut and Jobs Act went into effect, the donors that started disappearing were under $500. So we continue to see that cohort of donors disappearing in increments over the subsequent years. So I agree with you. I think it isn't just that everyday donors are going to continue to still give. I think you're right. We're on borrowed time. They will likely continue to disappear at smaller, maybe imperceptible rates. But that's why it's so important for organizations to continue to stay close to their donors, mm. to continue to be transparent and vulnerable with donors, and not just focus on the larger supporters, but all of their supporters. We saw really, during the pandemic, we saw really nice and surprising reactivation rates of people who had become lapsed to organizations and then restarted their support because something caught their attention. They were reminded that that was an organization they once supported. It was now, they were in need of greater support. And so they sort of stepped up. And that was great. But we know that donor retention is terrible in the sector. It continues to not improve. And we have to be paying attention to how we communicate with our donors in a more meaningful way. So a moment like this is an opportunity to reach out to those supporters to say, this is what's happening, that what you're reading in the paper is affecting us.
It's real,
and it's affecting us in this way. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're doing about it. So coming back to my first point about this sort of scenario planning, it could be a couple of different opportunities to say to donors, first, we're still figuring this out. We are really stressed, but we are here and committed to this mission, to our clients, and so forth, right? And you just leave it at, we're going to keep you apprised because you have been so loyally supportive of us. The next communication could be, we have been working through some options. We've been trying to forecast as best as we can with the ever-changing daily updates, of what's happening in Washington. We are going through and figuring out what it might look in best case and worst case scenario, and we're going to let you know, how you can best support us. Because what's an invitation now is not just to continue to support, but it's also to be an advocate. So call your congressperson or your representative, call your, sign this petition, add your voice to our cause in all these different ways, not just contributing, which is of course important. So that transparency and vulnerability will feel really strange for some leaders.
Right.
But
yes.
You have to be, I heard during the early part of all of this, one nonprofit leader say to me, the donors can read the paper. And I said, yes, they can, but they don't know what's going through your mind during this moment.
Yes.
And if you are open with them about that and the uncertainty and the stress and the panic or the fear, that's going to help them to see where they can help you.
And I don't want to oversimplify this in one word, but it's leadership.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
It's leadership.
Yes.
It's taking the lead in that conversation and saying, are as aware of this as you are.
Yes.
Here's our take on it. Mm-hmm. Here's where it will hurt mm-hmm. or it may hurt. Mm-hmm. But here's our approach and what we're going to do about it. I love, this has been phenomenal. This has been phenomenal. I wish we had another 10, 20 minutes. This is great. Always a pleasure talking with you. And listen, we're not done this year.
No.
I think we'll see you in September.
We will be in San Antonio. It's my second favorite conference behind ICON.
Oh, okay. So we have work to do. For those listening in, we're referring to the RAISE conference this year, September 8th and 9th in San Antonio, our first time in San Antonio. Yes. And last year, as you know, Barbara, we had about 700 fearless fundraisers in Nashville.
Yep.
We're going to try to top that number.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'm excited.
Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you for making time for me. Always good to speak with you, Steve.
Likewise. All right, welcome back, Fearless Fundraisers. We are again live on the show floor here at AFP Icon 2025. And I have the pleasure of speaking with Kimberly Bottom from Feather.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it was great to run into you this morning. And thanks so much for letting me snag you and pull you into the booth here. And here we are at our makeshift RAISE Nation Radio studio. How's it feel behind the? You're like official. You got the headphones. You got
I know. I feel the part. Like I've got the headphones on and like the microphone is really big and right in your face. So I don't know. I'm ready.
That's how we do it.
Exactly.
That's how we do it. Well, Feather has been such a great friend of One Cause and a partner for many years. And we see you at our RAISE conference, which is coming up again.
Yeah. We can't wait to come back.
Well, we're excited to have you back. Mm-hmm. But here we are at AFP. How's the show going for you so far?
It's really, really good. We have really enjoyed seeing our nonprofit people face to face. 2025 has been rough, right? And we all just need each other. So it's been great to connect with people and actually see them in person.
We do. You know, I've talked with a number of people already and a pleasure with each one. I'm excited to talk about this topic. You and I were just talking off air about growth. And I think, I'm sure nonprofits are thinking in terms of growth right now. They're probably thinking of just kind of keeping the house in order,
right,
together. But growth is like, let's still elevate our thinking. How do we reach more? How do we get that story out there? This is what you do.
Right. That's the hard part about growth is that there's no one way to go about it, right?
Okay.
I mean, you could canvas neighborhoods, you could hold events, you could do peer-to-peer. There's a million ways. And for a nonprofit professional that has 17 other jobs they're already doing, figuring out the one that works for that nonprofit in that community is really daunting.
Yes.
So, but growth is important, right? We can't stay stagnant. We've got cycling generations of supporters that we have to continually go out and spread our message. It's funny, at Feather, we have a slogan that's marketing is good with a capital G. And we put that out there because marketing gets this bad rap in the nonprofit space as this self-serving, salesy entity,
yeah,
and it's not.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Having a great nonprofit without marketing is like throwing a party and hoping people find it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to send those invitations out. You have to let people know what you're doing. But even people that believe that, I go, okay, well, how? Where do I go first? So, you know, Feather is a digital platform. We believe in the power of digital because it does have, first of all, automation. It allows you to get in front of a lot of people easily. And in the way that people, quite frankly, engage now, we are spending half of our waking hours looking at a screen.
Isn't
so if
crazy?
You're not, I know it is. I just got my screen time notification today because it's Sunday and I was like, okay, thanks for the reminder, iPhone. I know I look at my phone too much, but it's the reality.
Yes.
And that, you know, where people are, you have to meet them there. So the good news about this shift to digital is that you can do it sort of en masse. The one-to-many strategy gets easier on a digital side. So I would just say that the people that are looking to grow, kind of shift your focus in that direction first and see what are the low-hanging fruit options to get on to digital and get in front of people who you don't know much about them, but you can speak your message. And the people who really resonate with that, they'll come to you. They'll click that ad. They'll see that post. They'll visit your website. And then from there, you can really engage them and steward them. But I would say that, you know, we're definitely, and obviously biased opinion over here, we're a digital platform.
Yes.
And not to say that person-to-person things like direct mail to your major donors or holding galas and events is not important. It is. But that's more the stewardship bottom of the funnel, as we would say,
okay,
part, you know, keeping people interested and around. If you really just want to get your message out, you know, with a bullhorn, digital is kind of the way that people are starting to do that now in the nonprofits.
And that's a great awareness strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And where we as nonprofits want to likewise think, it's the other side of the coin, is how do I translate that into a retention strategy?
Yeah.
And that seems so just outside of reach, I should say. Not so outside of reach, but it's still outside of reach with the numbers that we see year after year after year. Any thoughts on that? How do we keep that? How do we keep? You mentioned stewardship. How do we make that
work? Again, no one silver bullet, right? It depends on your donors. And again, the good thing about being 2025 and being a little more technologically advanced is, hey, we have robots now, right? Like, they can help us with these things. So I would say look into the things that will help you automate some level of your stewardship outreach. We would love to take every single donor that gives to our organization to coffee and learn who they are. It's not feasible for the few humans who are behind the scenes doing the fundraising. Yes. So I would say that, you know, first of all, the thing, segmenting your groups is so important. Understanding the people who gave for the first time, maybe because they were part of a peer-to-peer campaign or they just got kind of interested in, you know, a campaign that you were running. You can automate some outreach to them and really make them feel loved and appreciated without having to go all the way to sending them a gift basket or taking them, you know, to lunch or something like that. So that could be something like, there's something we have called now, you know, an email drip campaign, which is just a series of emails that are preset, and they're not just set based on like one goes out one day, a week later another goes out. We have automations now that can pay attention to behaviors as well. So if you open that email, you might get a different email. If you don't open that email, we might contact you a different way. Or if we notice that you visit our website, because we can track those things now, we can send the next email that's supposed to come next week earlier, because clearly you're on our website today, so you're interested today. Right. So those are the little nuances that can be automated for nonprofits nowadays that make the person on the other end of that outreach feel like, I'm paying attention to you. Oh, you noticed that I was on your website. Or, oh, shoot, I didn't open that email. And the title of the next email was, did you get our message? You know, those types of things that say, like, hey, I see you.
Right.
Like, you're a busy human, and I'm trying to be the best that I can for you. Help me do that. And I feel like everybody nowadays appreciates that level of personalized outreach, and you don't have to do it all manually.
Well, and I love that you just said the word personalized, because implicit in your earlier point about segmentation, there's no point in segmenting if you send the same message.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, maybe there's some reporting benefit on the back end just to see what's going on with that particular population. But nonprofits can really win when they interview, when they listen, when they capture what is the heartbeat, what is the love language of a given segment. So yes, implicit in that idea of segmenting is messaging.
It is. And that is a tough thing to do, because that is so dependent on the organization and the people that it serves and the people that support. We are, you know, as marketers, firm believers in testing. We always say test, don't guess, because you might assume you know what your audience wants. You are probably wrong. We actually, there was a Next After. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Next After, but they put out really, really great, just real examples of what works and what doesn't work in marketing. And they had one email appeal, one that went out that was all text. It was just a block of text.
Okay.
And then they sent out another one with a video, in same message, but in a video format in the email. Most people nowadays would be like, oh, the video, I'm sure it killed it. The text block email performed 500% better than the video. Now, this is not me advocating for a text block of message and email.
Right, don't go do that.
I was, you know, former video producer up here slowly dying inside hearing that. But
something
that's
about,
all to say is that that audience resonated with that message in that way for some reason that we may never know why. But if they didn't test that, they could have blasted out a video and had 50% of the results that they did, because they didn't take the time to go, let's try two different variations of the same message and see, like, what words, what phrases, what design, where I put the donate button. All those things matter. We're very complicated creatures in the way that we think and react. And you really have to lean into those things. And that is an ongoing process. It's not like, well, we figured it out, we're done. You know, you have to do that with every campaign.
Because it's constantly tracing the direction and the course of where your donors are at. And that's going to change. I live in marketing. I'm a product marketer by trade. And it is constantly understanding where people are and how to communicate and resonate with them, with your messaging.
Right.
So all good stuff. Thank you so much for stopping by, Kimberly. What a pleasure. Come back. Raise Nation Radio. The mic is always open for you. And say hi to our friends at Feather.
That's so kind. Thank you for having me, Steve. We would love to come back, and we can't wait to see you and hopefully some of you guys on Raise Nation Radio at Raise coming up this year. We're really
excited. Sounds amazing. We'll see you then.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, folks, we have Samantha Swaim, Swaim Strategies. Samantha, thank you so much for taking just a couple minutes. I know the show is busy and it's fun and it's engaging and it's active.
It's everything, right?
But
so much.
But you're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. It's busy time. It's a changing time.
Yes.
It's a crazy time.
It is.
But I'm glad to be here with lots of fundraisers.
And we're in the great Pacific Northwest.
We are, my home. I'm not from Seattle. I'm a Portlander, but it's just 3 hours away, and it feels like we're sister cities. So.
I would say for somebody born an hour outside of Philadelphia and now lives in Indianapolis, this still feels like it's all like one big area.
Yeah, it is. It is. We have all the big trees and the mossy, wet, drippy days. Well, you came in on a beautiful weekend. We've had like that perfect spring where all the green is green. It's
so
amazing.
I had a friend of mine move from Indianapolis out to Seattle, let's say 8 years ago. I had the blessing of scheduling some time with him as when I first got off the airplane. And I told him, I said, Joe, I think this whole like weather thing that you guys talk about is
a
social hoax.
It's a lie.
It is. So folks that are listening to this after the fact, two gorgeous days here
gorgeous.
In Seattle.
Yeah, it's been really beautiful. But today's a little cloudier, so it's a good day to be inside with everyone.
Yes, yes. And we're not here to talk about the weather.
No.
We're here to talk about fundraising.
Yes, let's talk about it.
Yeah. So you are in the events world. You do so much. So what are you seeing? What's going on? What's the latest?
Fundraising events are our core bread and butter. And I think that for a very long time in the fundraising world, we've heard, don't do events. There's so much labor. There's so much hard work. And I didn't necessarily battle that because I do agree there are a lot of hard work and labor. But through that pandemic time, we learned how oftentimes an event is the only time our donors connect to us and are the only time that they're actually invited in, right? And
yes.
to be a part of something. Here in the Pacific Northwest at University of Washington, Susan Howlett is a researcher, and she's researched why people give, and the three motivators are a universal that she continues to find in all her research is that people give because of mission, right?
Yes.
They give because they love the cause and this is how they want to manifest the world, but they give also to be a part of something, a sense of belonging, community, connection. And they're equally motivated to give for the recognition, the fact that they're seen as a good person, that they're seen as a contributor to this work. And there is no other place that we can do all three of those at once than an event. And so we're seeing that events came back strong after the pandemic. They have been growing. But what we're really seeing right now in this political climate is that people are utilizing events to bring people together and build coalitions, create tighter communities, broaden their community, and replace income, right? Mm. If they've lost a federal grant, they're holding dinner parties and house parties and inviting people in to try to reconnect people back to the mission. And events are a really easy way to do that.
Love so much in there. I wish we had like a lot of time to unpack that. But one of the things you talked there about was a sense of community.
Yeah.
And when I think of events, I often think in my mind, at least Samantha, of the community in the room.
Yeah.
But there's more to that. What you said, it was nuanced. And it was almost in the sense like we're coming together from out there.
Yeah.
What's going on out of the room? Because what we can do here has that impact once we leave, and it will carry out there.
It will. And it creates a shared experience. Mm-hmm. We've also seen just with advancements of technology, honestly, with the work that One Cause has done, we've been able to do things for organizations where maybe they're a statewide organization and they are represented in 5 or 6 metropolitan areas, and they can have a single event on a single night in all 6 of the communities.
I know how you do that.
Tell
our audience how you do that.
Well, we have been doing a lot of hybrid events still, and we have found that those folks who have either a statewide or national footprint or have a donor or alumni base that's out of their network, that the broadcast element is a very low cost way to invite people in. And the best part about it, and what you all have done, is created an easy way for people to tune in, but also click and give and donate and do all the same things. You can be recognized. You can feel like you're a part of something. You watch that thermometer rise and you're tapping into collective action. And then you're tapping into the like neuropsychology of belonging and that sense of that good juice that flows yes. when you feel like you're a part of something successful. And so hybrid events have been our bread and butter for the past couple of years. And we have found that they're most impactful when organizations have donors that are not in the same metropolitan area or not able to be all within the same space. Even if like your venue is limiting, we have a lot of rural communities that are like, our biggest venue is 50 people. How do we gather people? And so they're able to broadcast and have 500 people at their event because there's viewers at home and viewers in the room. So the hybrid space has been a space that we've really seen huge growth.
And you were saying, just to kind of say this a different way, that I can be in one city.
Yeah.
That you're for an event you're helping to run.
Yeah.
My friend Katie can be in another city.
Yeah.
We're all passionate about the same cause, the same mission.
Yeah.
I can see her name show up on the screen, yes. my name on the screen.
Yeah, all at the same time. We recently did an event where their organization has kind of two hubs. They have two campuses, and one's in Oregon and one's in California. And so we had people gathered in both locations at the same time, and they had live hosts that passed it back and forth. So then it even became kind of competitive about who's giving California
That's
versus who's
awesome.
Giving from Oregon, and how much is California raising and how much is Oregon
We've
raising.
We've got spirit. How about you?
Exactly. And they were live at the exact same time, passing it back and forth. You could see what was happening in each of the rooms. You could see the audience. They had a keynote speaker in the San Francisco event. They had a fundraising host that was in both rooms that was actively raising money. And we tied the whole thing together, and viewers could be in Arizona and Texas also viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask this question about, from the perspective of a fundraising professional who hears you say that, has the vision that maybe that's something I could do, but then thinks that's too complicated.
It's not that complicated. Especially if you have an expert AV resource that can help you with live streaming. Live streaming tools have become pretty inexpensive, pretty prolific, pretty accessible. And so all you need is a really good audio feed and camera, single camera that can capture. I love to have a host also that's comfortable talking to the camera and yes. talking to the room so that there is a connection that we have folks tuning in. Audience in the room, let's say hello to all the folks tuning in at home. Friends at home, say hello in the chat to everyone that's in the room. We've even broadcast the chat in the room so that viewers in the room can see the chat. They can even scan a QR code and participate in the chat. So it's nice to be able to tie it all together. It's pretty inexpensive as long as you have an AV partner that understands the live stream aspect.
Okay, so I'm going to get really, really practical.
Okay.
A nonprofit is listening to this. And first of all, thank you, nonprofit, for listening to this. But I am dealing with some funding changes in the current climate. And I determined that it is in my best interest and that of our mission to ramp up what we're doing with events mm-hmm. because of everything you just said. I can get into this idea of multi-location, broadening the audience. And is it inconceivable that I could see greater raises?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's just almost a numbers game,
okay.
even just you're creating more access and therefore you have more donors that can give.
Yeah.
You also have a lot less cost. You're not feeding them. Right? You're not giving them the infrastructure of tables and chairs and place settings. But I think for me, the hybrid space has answered a lot of problems in the fundraising event world. It's solved the problem of what do I do if I have a limited budget or a limited venue, but still have a huge group of people I want to include? You can broadcast it.
Love it.
What do you do if you are on one side of a border and you have donors on the other side of the border and traveling is a scary proposition at the time? Broadcast. Maybe you're a culturally specific event and the advocacy work you're doing has threats around it. For example, gathering a group of people and having the threat of like ICE or detainment in a gathering, broadcast solves that. Maybe you have a wealthy donor base that can afford to be in the room, but you have 100,000 volunteers out there that love your mission who can't buy the $250 ticket. Broadcast solves that. So to me, the hybrid space solves a lot of challenges.
So many use cases.
Yeah.
So many use cases. I think my mind was kind of, I hear hybrid and it was always tied back to a few years ago.
Right. A solution for the moment.
For the moment of the pandemic.
But the folks that we have that have continued doing hybrid have just continued to expand.
They're getting better and better.
Yeah. And we have, like, for example, we have an organization here in Seattle that we do a hybrid event for because they have an alumni base that's international. And they have folks that tune in from around the globe, and that audience has way surpassed the volume of people that are in the room. And they give as much as the folks that are there in person. Awesome. And there's a connection that's happening. We're acknowledging, you know, with tools like OneCause, we can click and see who's giving, and our auctioneer can be there and say, we just got a gift from this person, even though they're not in the room. Yes. So we even cue our auctioneer to say, acknowledge the gift in the room first, because the paddle is quicker. There's always like a 30-second delay in the online.
Smart.
And then we have them pause and acknowledge all the gifts coming in from home. And that back and forth has created a level of inclusion. Even I produce events. I'm at hundreds of events a year, and I can't attend all of the events. But when there's one that I can tap into the broadcast, I tune in, I give.
Yeah.
And I'm making dinner while I do it, you know?
That's
it
awesome.
Makes it so much more accessible.
That's so cool. Oh, my word. Well, listen, anytime you want to talk about events,
okay,
especially hybrid events.
Excellent.
That was so cool. Yeah, we'll have to do this again at Raise.
I look forward to
You're
it.
You're going to be behind the mic there as well.
Yeah, we're going to be combining forces. We have the Raise Nation Radio podcast and our podcast, The Fundraising Elevator. We're going to co-host and share a bunch of the content together and try to expand our audiences. And Raise is just one of our favorite conferences every year.
Well, Samantha, thank you for joining us
on
Raise Nation Radio here at ICON. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks for joining us here at the Raise Nation Radio Studio in the OneCause booth at AFP Icon 2025. I'm Steve Lausch from OneCause, and it's been an honor to host Raise Nation Radio, bringing you the voices, the ideas, and the inspiration that are truly elevating impact across the nonprofit world. Huge thanks to AFP and all of the incredible changemakers who joined us this week. Until next time, keep raising your voice, your mission, and your impact.